Whitley Strieber with us. We're going to take some calls and continue chatting with him about his truly remarkable experience and also his Alien Hunters series, of course. He's got another one coming out in April. But the Sci-Fi Network is turning it into a television program. Well, I'll let him tell you about that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. We're back with Whitley Strieber, unknowncountry.com, and, of course, a noted author, including The Alien Hunter. He's got another one coming out in April. Sci-Fi is going to turn that into a TV show. And you were watching the taping of these episodes, weren't you?
Yeah, it was just down in Melbourne. The show was being made in Melbourne because they need a cityscape. They need good sound stages. They needed a forest, a desert, and a jungle. And that's the only place in the world with excellent trades of people who are skilled in these in this type of work, where we also had all of those locations close enough to drive to. So that's where it was made, and it was so much fun. Gail Ann Hurd, I didn't see Gail down there, but she's been a tremendous driving force. But Natalie Chaidez, who also did 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi, is the showrunner.
That's with Bruce Willis, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
She is brilliant. I mean, that was the movie. I'm talking about the TV series.
Okay.
She is a brilliant showrunner, and she's taken my Alien Hunter characters and turned them into this really remarkable TV show called Hunters. And they've taped 13 episodes, and it starts in mid-April on the Sci-Fi Channel. I think it's going to be a really
this is huge,
experience
Whitley.
To watch. It plays off of my themes in my books in the Alien Hunter series, but it's its own thing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yes, it's got its own personality,
but it picks up on it. Some new characters in it. And the question of the alien, what is the alien? And to what degree is this a mirror image of us? And what if, I don't want to risk any spoilers here, so I'm not going to go too far. But suffice to say, I think it's going to be a fascinating series. I hope people watch it on Sci-Fi. They've done quite a brilliant and unusual job.
That's fantastic. And we'll take some calls with you in a second here from people who want to probably share some of their stories, too, about the incredible experience that has happened to you. And I assume it keeps happening, doesn't it?
With Anne?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let me tell you, I've been very worried about the planet for a long time, and I brought that to her. First of all, she said, and she wants me to make sure people understand this, because we do not understand it, that the people who have passed over do not necessarily know everything. We have a tendency to think that they know all of our secrets in the past and the future. But Annie says souls have to disclose, and it's hard. It's not easy to reveal yourself, even to yourself. But it's a process that goes on there. However, I was talking to her about the planet, and she said the most surprising thing. I was saying that I was so afraid that the planet was going to fail, and she said, oh, sure it will. They all do. But there's millions of them. They're soul factories. And then she showed me an image of the universe. She said, we don't see it the way you see it at all. We don't see the stars. We see something different. And I saw this vibrant web of lights, unimaginably vast, George. And I realized what it was. It was planets which had living creatures on them. They were glowing like in that level of reality, those are the stars. Earth, in that level of reality, is a star with a life cycle and a beginning, middle, and end, just like regular stars have that we see, but it's a different kind. And it was so, my word, so beautiful and deeply moving. And I was just overawed by it. I hadn't ever thought of the universe as a living being, a vast web of life.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
It's like the Gaia theory on the planet Earth.
So much bigger.
Yes.
So vast. It was so beautiful. So there's been a lot of communication. And, it's not always, because I can try to get in contact with her and nothing happens. And then suddenly it does, or someone phones or writes and says it happened to them, but
she always marched to her own tune anyway.
Oh, she sure did. She sure did. She was, she had her own way of thinking and doing everything. I want to just mention her near-death experience in 2005, because I think it's important.
Okay. Please.
It wasn't a big elaborate one. She found herself in something like a subway station, and it was full of people sitting on benches clinging to these huge burdens, big bags and like suitcases and stuff. And she realized she was told she could go on if she wanted to. And she met our little cat, Co, who had said to her, "You stupid humans, you can't even find the world of the dead on your own." and in any case, of course, the cats are there. Where else would they be?
Of course, yeah.
But she always pointed out that you have to let these burdens go. And, the burdens are the losses, the regrets, especially the regrets. We're all full of those, of life and the things that we left undone.
Oh, if we could only go back,
Yeah, if only. You got to let the if-onlys go so that you can fly free. In her diary, The Love That Led Me Home, she said in the last lines, "All that really survives of us is the love we have made in the world. It's a simple truth that will stay with me forever, even when I pass again across the threshold, this time never to return, especially then."
That's beautiful.
And that is, Annie was made of love. Of course, she had a temper, and I'm darn good at making women mad. I always have been.
I've seen your little temper sometimes, too.
Well, yeah, in any case, never forget that NDE. It's simple. It takes 5 minutes, but is it ever freeing to really live with that.
Let's take some calls. This is hours going by fast, by the way. And by the way, Whitley, Merry Christmas to you, too.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Let's go to Diana in Honolulu. Welcome to the program, and Merry Christmas to you, Diana.
Hi, Merry Christmas to you both, too.
Thank you.
I'm interested in the paranormal aspect and the synchronism that seems to go along with these abductions. And I'm curious, do you feel like your psychic abilities became enhanced before your abduction, after your abductions, or what I'm trying to get at is, when did you develop your psychic abilities?
Well, that's a good question. I'll tell you what I think. I think I've always had this psychic sort of ability. And it's not, it's just part of nature. I think we've all got
it. We all have it. Tuned in somehow.
But
you were tuned in.
I was living I believed in the soul, but I was living a very secular life in the sense that if you had asked me before this first event happened, is there an afterlife? I would have said, well, possibly. But afterwards, everything was completely enhanced, because I thought to myself, wow, this was terrifying, but what a revelation. What a revelation. And I became aware of the fact, all of this stuff that I've sort of vaguely thought might have something to it is real. There's a big world out there. This isn't the world. This is only a little corner of the world. It was awesome. So I would say that the energy of the experience, as difficult as it was, also brought me to a new level in terms of psychic sensitivity.
When we all have this ability, but some people can't magnify it like others, like you did, I believe that training, meditation helps bring that out, don't you?
Oh, I think so. People say, some psychics say it can't be taught. I think it's just natural. I think it's part of all of us. And like Annie, was absolutely not psychic. And, she was always...
Oh, but she was intuitive.
But so incredibly intuitive. Yeah. And the thing that was so strange about her, she knew a real psychic from a person who only thought they were psychic instantaneously. She was, I've always thought to myself, not things happened when I was a child, I think. But as I said in my book, The Secret School, about childhood, I can't be sure and of any of it. But I can be sure, once I met Anne, and we got married and started living together, then this stuff, weird stuff, all started happening. I think she was
the catalyst, huh?
Catalyst, absolutely, yeah.
Ralph in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ralph, go ahead, sir.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Wesley Strieber. I've heard you on this program before, and I love you, but... The Wolfen, the book.
Mm-hmm.
I named my dog Wolfen because of you. I love that book so much. It was the most wonderful book.
Oh, thanks.
It was fabulous. I couldn't believe that you're the one, because I've heard you before, but I didn't know that you were the author of that book. When did you release that, in the 70s?
That book came out, let's see, I think McKinley was president. No, I'm just kidding. I was in the 70s. I think it was like 78. But
They made a TV movie about that, too, I'm sure you know.
Yeah. You can go to my author website, Strieber.com. That's with an IE, not an EI. Strieber.com, and you'll find The Wolfen and War Day, and all of those books are available in electronic format now.
Wow.
So if you want to, you can do that.
Super. Joe in the Bronx, it's your turn, Joseph. And
hey,
Merry
George,
Christmas.
Merry Christmas. It's Christmas here right now. Yep. And Merry Christmas to you, Whitley Strieber. Sorry about the loss of your wife. My condolences. I wanted to ask you, now, since communion, since your experiences in the Adirondacks, the abduction experiences, have you had anything similar or near similar to that?
Oh, yeah. I had encounters and so forth at my cabin up there for years afterwards, until I guess 1994, and many of them with groups of witnesses, and they are chronicled in the subsequent books, Transformation and Breakthrough, and revisited in a new way in Solving the Communion Enigma, which was published a couple of years ago. So, yes, most certainly, and you should get into them because they're fascinating. But bear this in mind and never forget this, not only when you're listening to me describing these experiences, but others as well. What we are describing are perceptions. In other words, we are describing what we saw.
not necessarily what was there. We don't know that. We know what we can describe, but we don't know if what we are describing is what was actually there. And that's a very, very important distinction. That said, the books are accurate chronicles of all of this experience, and there was a lot of it. It would take me 6 hours just to get into it, in fact.
Was there one experience, Whitley, that you wished never would have happened?
No.
Okay.
No. There were one or two that were really, really difficult. But, you know, it's hard to... I think that the first experience was so violent because they'd just been trying to wake me up. I think they'd been around for... I was all through... The experience happened in December. All fall, I was obsessively going up to the cabin, but also filling it with alarm systems and patrolling with a shotgun, and I knew someone was there. Something was there. But I couldn't kind of get it. And then finally, they just simply dragged me out of the house and shook me awake, and I got it. And that's essentially what happened to me. So after that, it became extremely complex, dangerous, beautiful, enlightening, frightening, everything. The whole gamut of intellect, physicality, and emotions were engaged.
This is the strongest I've heard you and felt you since this tragedy occurred.
Since Annie died?
Yeah.
I'm getting to the point where I have accepted my grief. It will always be in me. I, you know, in our vow of marriage, we say, till death do us part. But part of the reason that I'm not so bereft anymore is that there is a lot of very intimate communication between us. And it isn't until death do us part. I'm sorry, but I'm still married. In fact, right now I wear two wedding rings. I wear my wedding ring and I wear Anne's on my pinky finger right beside it because I don't feel like our marriage is over.
You're a good man, Whitley. Indeed. Whitley's website, unknowncountry.com. Go take a look at some of his works, and as he said, a series will be coming out soon on the Sci-Fi Network, Good People, called The Hunters, based on his series of books, Alien Hunter Book Series. Fantastic. It's going to be a great TV show. And we'll let you know when it's out, when it gets closer to that air date. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls with Whitley Strieber. And also, just don't forget, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We send out information to you all the time, so make sure you're part of that. And, of course, this is our Christmas Eve show because tomorrow night will be our Christmas show.
Hi, everybody. This is Daniel Brinkley, wishing the entire Coast family a very, very Merry Christmas and an absolute Happy New Year.
Good old Daniel Brinkley, Saved by the Light. There's a guy who joined the other side three times and he came back, Whitley. Quite a guy, isn't he?
Yeah, I love Daniel. I haven't seen him in a while. I'd love to see him again soon.
Yeah, I was with him at a conference earlier this year. He's looking good. He keeps fighting back, and he does remarkable work for the troops with his Twilight Brigade.
Yeah, he sure does.
And just keeps going. Let me ask you quickly before we go to final calls, Whitley. The weather in St. Louis, where I am right now, has been bizarre. I mean, 70 degrees going into Christmas. I expected a little white Christmas, a little snow, but with the temperatures that warm, this rain we've been having is not going to, it's not going to snow. What the heck is going on?
Well, on unknowncountry.com, oh, by the way, I wanted to mention my weekly radio show, Dreamland, my podcast, has a special 2-hour special this week with all kinds of great guests, including Linda Moulton Howe.
Okay, great.
Even Alexander, etc. So people should definitely listen to that. In any case, the Climate Watch on Unknown Country predicted this some months ago. And what's happening is that El Nino is bringing in a lot of warm, moist air that in your part of the world is coming up through the Gulf of Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and flowing just like as if it was spring or summer. And however, at the same time, there's a big cold air mass being pushed down from the north, ironically, from warmer air in the very far north, up near the Arctic, up above the Arctic Circle. And right now, that air is covering parts of Europe, but it will, over the course of the winter, be moving kind of back and forth in a kind of battle over the United States, which is why there's so much violent weather, and people have, a lot of lives have been lost just in the past couple of days. And frankly, in St. Louis, you're very susceptible. You could definitely see some serious violent weather around there at any time.
And I'll be going back to Los Angeles in a few weeks. They're expecting some heavy rains from El Nino. Hasn't happened yet. Will it?
That's an interesting question. Will it get as far south as Los Angeles? Every indication is that it will, but until it actually does that, we can't be certain, because what happens to the trade winds across the Pacific, how they work, it depends on how far south this system will go. I think it will. I think that you'll see a lot of rain in Southern California and down into Mexico, in fact, because this is a big El Nino. It's a whopper. The biggest, I think it's the biggest right now on record or close
yes,
to it.
Absolutely huge. Okay, let's go to some final calls here with Whitley Strieber. And right before Whitley's off with us, we will tell you about his website again and how you can listen to his program, Dreamland. Greg in New Mexico, west of the Rockies. Hey, Greg, thanks for calling. Greg? I see we're on this delay, and he's obviously got it on. So now he's going to hear his name, but he's gone now. Jacob in San Jose, California. Hey, Jacob, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Strieber, many people at this time of the year are thinking of Santa's workshop above the Arctic Circle, but how is it with after World War II, with the Operation High Jump? Was that a hoax? Did that really happen? Did James Forrestal's diary get taken by the CIA and given to you to make your book Majestic? Could you give us a comment, please, on that topic?
I'm not entirely sure I heard everything the caller said, George.
He was talking about James Forrestal and copies of information that you might have gotten for one of your books on
Majestic.
Yeah.
No, I'll tell you where that came from. Majestic is a book about the Roswell incident. And after I published Communion, one of my uncles, one of my father's brothers, called me up. He'd been in Air Force intelligence for his whole career. And he said, I'd like to talk to you. Would you please come down to San Antonio and talk to me about this book about Communion? I said, sure, because I was interested, because he was very, very close-mouthed about what he did. And so I went down, and we had lunch together, and he told me about the following. He said he had been at Wright Field, which became Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, in 1947, and had helped to assemble the debris that had been brought from Roswell, New Mexico. And he said, my commanding officer, Art Exon, would also like to talk to you. And so I was fascinated. I had read Bill Moore and Charles Berlitz's book about the Roswell incident.
Right.
And So I telephoned, when I got back to New York, I telephoned General Exon and had a quite a long conversation with him about it. And he said, and I quote, "Everyone from Truman on down knew that what we'd found was not of this world within 24 hours of our finding it." And he became the commanding officer at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and had a very fine career in the Air Force, and I had absolutely no reason to disbelieve him or my uncle. I'm sure they were telling me the truth. There would be no reason for them not to. And I couldn't get any documents. The caller mentioned documents. I wish I had gotten documents, but I got no documents. Without documents, there was nothing to do but to write a novel. And the novel contains information I believe to be, some of it to be true, but I wouldn't say it's an entirely factual novel. It's not. Some of it's fiction, some of it's fact.
But that's what a novel does.
Yeah, the characters are made up characters, but the basic idea that the incident happened and that there was discussion about the incident at very high levels, and that the Central Intelligence Agency's uneasiness about it is what was just becoming the Central Intelligence Agency at the time, about what it meant and what implications it would have if it was exposed to the general public, dovetailed with the Air Force's initial concern that what it was some kind of a spy plane or balloon that had been sent from Russia to spy on the bomber wing at Roswell. Because at the time, that bomber wing was the only thing keeping 4 million Soviet troops from sweeping all the way to the English Channel. The Stalin was afraid of the bombs.
Mm-hmm.
What Stalin did not know was we didn't have but a few, 3 or 4 atomic bombs left, and it would be not until the early 50s that we would build enough to really be a deterrent force. So it was all a big bluff. And they were terrified that this, whatever it was Russian. That was what the initial secrecy was about. And then the Central Intelligence Agency continued the secrecy. And it continues to this day, unfortunately, or perhaps fortunately, I don't know.
But Edward, in Maryland, you're on with Whitley Strieber on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Edward.
Hey, how you doing today, y'all?
Good, Edward. Thank you.
Quick question. Well, I don't know how to start, but basically I would see UFOs. They would be more like star-like craft, I guess I could say. And I'm not sure where to begin with the question, but I guess it began when I had anxiety, and there were doctors couldn't explain anything, and basically I would start to change my life and work out and get healthy. And that's when I noticed all these paranormal activities and UFO crafts would pop up out of anywhere. So basically my question is, well, what should I do, or what is going on with this activity going on? Because I really can't explain it because I would see it so much. And the starlight crafts were basically pulsate. And one time I took my lighter and I flashed at it, and it did it again. So I said, well, let me do it twice to see if it really is, you know, actually going on. And it would pulsate twice. And I really couldn't explain it. And I'm pretty young. I'm only 26 years old.
Have you felt, Edward, that you've been abducted before?
Oh, no. I've never felt abducted before, but these crafts that would, that actually, this would be over my house, actually.
All right.
I mean, these things would, not only over my house, anywhere I would go.
Do they sometimes, Whitley, key in on a certain person?
Oh, sure.
Like that?
Okay. All the time. But what they are and what's exactly is happening, we don't know. I think it's fascinating if you're flashing a light and getting a response. Not many people have that kind of experience, and it enables you to open your eyes and see, you know, that right around us and right in our lives is a very big and mysterious universe. It's a wonderful thing to have happen. I can't say that everything that happens in this experience is wonderful, because it's not, but that kind of thing is beautiful because it's so mind-opening. as to what you should do about it, just live with it.
Go with the flow, huh?
Go with the flow, sure. And however, if they show up in your house at some point, you'll just have to, you know, deal with that as best you can, as millions of us have done. And sometimes people are scared out of their skin, like I was, and other times it's not like that, you know, so it'll just have to be, you just have to roll with it.
Whitley, are you still plagued with whatever is near the base of your ear?
The implant, it's still there. It doesn't bother me at all, but I'm certainly not going to fool with it.
No.
It's been there now since 1989, and I'm still going strong.
You did get a little chunk of it before it moved on.
What happened was this. The night after, it was put in by people, by the way, folks, I didn't see any aliens around. I may have, but in retrospect, I remember distinctly two people were involved. And there was no scar, there was no opening or anything, it was just there the next day. When I went to a doctor to get it removed on the theory that it was a cyst, he had read communion, he sort of knew probably wasn't a cyst, but in any case, he tried to remove it, but when he touched it, and I'm feeling it in my ear right now, and it's just as stiff as it ever was.
Jeez.
It actually moved from the middle of the back of my ear down and way down into my earlobe on its own. And he was just shocked. He just pulled out and he said, well, I've never seen anything like that before. Obviously, I'd have to cut your ear off in order to get it, and I might not even get it then. He had a little corner of it on his scalpel, which he put into a tube and sent to pathology, and the pathologist actually phoned him and said, this is extremely strange. Is it a joke? And he said, no, it's not a joke. It came out of a patient's ear. He said, because it's a metal base in this, and there's cilia, living cilia, they're moving, I can see them moving, attached to it. And indeed, it was alive because it came back and moved back up into the same place in my ear 3 or 4 days later. And there it remains. I'm not going to touch it again.
No, I wouldn't. You never know what'll happen. Let's go to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Thomas, thanks for holding. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas, George, and Merry Christmas, Whitley. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Thank you.
Whitley, I had heard rumors that you were planning on doing either a film or a documentary on War Day, which you wrote 30 years ago. And War Day, for the Coast audience, is about a very extremely limited nuclear exchange between Russia and the United States. And even though it's very limited, it was very devastating to both Russia and the United States. And it would still be very relevant today if there was like a film or a documentary made on it, particularly since Russia, China, and the United States it seems like they're ramping up again for another Cold War like the 1980s.
You know, it's an interesting question. A couple of things. First, I have noticed that War Day is selling a lot of copies on Streber.com after all these years, all of a sudden.
It's a great book.
Yeah, but it's also, it hasn't sold, it's probably sold more books in the last 6 months than it has in the past 10 years. And it's because this is becoming relevant again, and people know that. There's no movie interest that I know of, but there could be that I haven't heard about yet, and that's quite possible. It could be true, and there could be such a thing. In the Dreamland special, we have Joseph Farrell, who's been on Coast many times.
Yes,
has some really interesting things to say about the possibility of a nuclear war taking place, and how the modern period right now is like the world in some ways, like the world was right before World War One unexpectedly broke out. It was really pretty creepy, but I think War Day would be a wonderful movie. I hadn't thought about it in terms of a documentary, and I don't know of any specific plans, but if there are some, I would be obviously delighted. I think it'd be a good movie.
Greg in New Mexico, let's squeeze you in here. Gregory, go ahead.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Merry Christmas to you, gentlemen.
You too, Greg.
I was going to ask a question to Mr. Stryber. This event happened to me when I was 8 years old. I was on roller skates, and I fell back, and it hit my head, the back of my head, and it was a mind-bending kind of a pain shooting through it. A couple of nights later, I woke up, and I saw these little square beams bobbing back and forth in front of me, almost bee-like. I had headaches for a couple of days, real severe headaches. Jeez. Once that happened, what happened was I ran through the house. My parents said I was running through the house with my eyes closed, screaming about the little men. And when I read the book Communion, I think Mr. Stryber mentioned something to this effect, which really hit home. I was wanting to have his take on that.
All right, and we have about 40 seconds left. Whitley,
okay, well, first of all, if you had a head injury like that and a concussion can cause hallucinations of all kinds. And so there's no way to tell. If you'd been perfectly healthy when that happened, it might be a different story. But the experience I had was very physical. In other words, I was physically carried out and of the house, and
yeah,
next day had plenty of injuries.
It's happened to you. Whitley, Merry Christmas to you, my friend. Stay in touch with us, okay?
Merry Christmas.
Whitley Strieber, unknowncountry.com. I'll be back in a moment as we talk about angels and miracles with Rosemary Ellen Guiley.